Hello everyone, how are you doing? If you're new here, I'm Dr. Sheen, an Oxford and Cambridge graduate, a tech entrepreneur and business coach.
And welcome back to Dream Girl. I'm Sheen, your host, and today we're joined by the lovely Shayoon. Shayoon is an entrepreneur, a creator, a life force healer, and she is helping so many people around the world, you know, dealing with the trauma, the physical and emotional pain, and really aligning with their true purpose, which I absolutely love. But she's also breaking all types of stereotypes, and she is a mother of two, and she's changing what motherhood looks like from very basic and simple things, but also in very bold ways. So I'm very excited to have her here today, and especially to talk to her about her activism with child sex trafficking. So hello, Shayoon, how are you today?
That was such a beautiful intro. Could you be my publicist?
Done. Where do I sign?
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
You know, I'm here because I was actually your biggest fan.
I can't believe that.
Like, swear. I told my friend Sarah, who you know, and I was like, whose podcast are you on? Because she dropped her son at my house and she was like, Sheen, I'm like, do you know how obsessed I am with like all of her content and her? So like, I manifested this, sorry.
Oh, I love it. We both manifested each other. How beautiful is that?
So beautiful. You're beautiful. Thank you for having me.
So are you. I mean, I keep trying not to look at your clothes or your hands or your jewelry. This is too distracting. But honestly, since the first time I feel like I messaged you, we immediately hit it off.
Yeah, you know, it's so nice to have that vibe with somebody in the city. And that's what I've been noticing because, you know, I got stuck in Dubai.
Yeah.
But the quality of people that I'm meeting here is just unmatched. So I'm so honored to be here with you.
So how long have you been here now?
I was in transit to Bali in January. And again, you're laughing because you know this happens to me. God will place me in places without telling me that I'm moving to those places. So I was in transit in January from New York, where I started my foundation. Mm-hmm. And we were going back to Bali, where we lived. And my son's passport was 2 days under 6 months. So still had 5 months and 28 almost days
left. Doesn't matter, right?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So we're like, no problem. We'll just stay in Dubai. I was like begging them, let me just at least go to Dubai. I can't stay in New York anymore. It was freezing. It was January. I was done.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, so we get to Dubai and I'm like, cool. I'll just get an emergency passport. Everything will be fine. No emergency passports available. Fast forward 16 weeks, still here.
16
way,
weeks.
Way more than that, actually. Yeah. They said it was going to take 16 weeks. So I was like, you know what? I'm actually so happy because I do believe there's places in the world that are your red line where if you go there, certain terrible things happen to you and you shouldn't go there. And that was Bali for me. Even though there was so much beauty, there was so much trauma and so much pain there that I am so happy I got stuck in the box.
Amazing. But
here I am. Now I'm a resident.
No, yay. You're legal here.
I'm legal. And meeting people like you.
It's amazing.
Just like doing purposeful, lifeful work. So here we are.
I'm glad these people didn't let you go.
Yeah.
You know?
Me too.
Now you're here. So I want to learn more about your history. Obviously, I've stalked you, but we're going to pretend I don't.
Yeah.
So tell us about how your life started. I know you have such interesting heritage and your journey has been worldwide.
Yeah.
So let's hear it.
Thank you. So I was born in Nairobi. I'm Kenyan. And people are like, but you're not African. Like, you don't look black. I'm like, yeah, but I'm Kenyan. Like, my mom's from Zanzibar. My dad's from Mombasa.
Yeah.
My grandmother's from Tanzania and Uganda. Like, it's, I'm African, you know? Mm. But nobody can still like take that. So they're like, yeah, but where are you from? And I'm like, I'm from Africa.
I'm the same. Know. You know, I'm from Mauritius, like, right?
Yes.
And I get the same thing. People are like, no.
No.
You know, but where are you
where
from?
Where are you from? And you're like, okay, if you want to know where my ancestors are from.
Ethnically.
Forefathers before that.
Sure.
My mom's side's Pakistani and my dad's side's Indian.
Okay.
But like forefathers before. So I look that way, but I'm actually African. And I moved to England when I was little, and then I moved to the States. And then I like to say I grew up in California because I feel like where you've spent the most time in like 17 through your 30s was like where I feel like I actually grew up.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Los Angeles with my husband, and we met at a very young age. And so prior to that, and I was living in Oklahoma, which was like completely different than Africa or London or Los Angeles, right? But I'm grateful because I had all of these geographical like experiences so young. And Oklahoma, you know, while it sounds exactly like what it is, it taught me so much about being able to adapt to wherever you are. And some of the best friends were from there. But during that time, I was in a terrible car accident. And my car flipped. I was caught in the car on fire and I couldn't get out. And so I woke up in the hospital. And as they do in the Western world, they told me I couldn't walk properly again. I wasn't going to be able to have children. I'd have to stay on this medication for the rest of my life because God forbid would share an actual cure or something that works, right? Or no. Yeah. Poor people actually just don't even know that this other healing or any sort of emotional freedom exists. So mm-hmm. I was subscribed and prescribed to the system. And I really quickly fell into depression and anxiety driven and just was super down that I was actually being convinced at 18 that I wasn't going to have children. Like, who says that, you know?
No, you were only 18 when the car accident happened. Oh, gosh.
And so I kind of was, you know, getting brainwashed into thinking like, okay, my life's over. I loved to dance, couldn't properly dance anymore, couldn't wear high heels. So it's like when you're really starting to like go out and find yourself, you know. And so I did what I could and I was doped up all the time on all the pain meds. I, you know, did what I wanted to do and I just partied and to get rid of the pain and to you know, just live life because I didn't know that there was a meaning. I didn't know I had a bigger purpose. I didn't have a mission or a vision or anything like that. So one day after escaping, also was in a horrible relationship, which I actually escaped from, like literally had to escape.
Yeah. From. Oh my goodness.
Because it was that violent. Mm-hmm. I found myself at Coachella 2010.
I love that.
And this was when it was super cool and there was only one weekend. And
that was back in the day, the OG Coachella. That was back in
the day, the OG. Yeah. Like, I am from the OG Coachella and that makes me feel so young. but here I am spinning in this field by myself like, oh my God, I'm free finally because I had, you know, the accident, the pain, and everything. Then this terrible relationship, which was even more depressing, right? So I'm like free, I'm dancing, and this man, boy, he says that he saw me from afar dancing for myself and he didn't want to interrupt because it was such a beautiful moment and he could tell that I was in my zone, which if you know him, Alexander, he is that type. Like he's just the most beautiful human on the planet. And then in a sea of 100,000 people, he sees me again. A few hours later, which doesn't really happen at Coachella, right?
The likelihood of
that. So it was, he says it was God given to him. And so he approached me. And in that moment, I was like looking at him. And at that time, I'm not sure if you heard, there's a company called Spirit Hoods. Yes. And they were the faux fur animal hats with the paws. That was like the whole rage, right?
Wasn't Justin Bieber and stuff
everyone.
Wearing it?
Yeah. So they designed for everyone. But before that, he was like slinging them out of backpacks at the festival, like jumping over like the gates to get in. And they would love it. Like total hood rats, right? And I'm looking at my friend and I'm like, do you see what I see? Like, are there these guys with like animals on their heads, like running toward me. And here I was super bougie, like had my shit together, staying at the 5-star hotel, you know, wasn't like boho yet. And, in my soul I was, but not publicly yet. And she was like, yeah, I definitely think that, you know, but they're hot. Like,
yeah,
that's fine. So I'm like, all right, cool.
That's allowed.
It's fine. So he asked me to dance and I danced with him and the fireworks went off and it was perfect timing. It was sunset and, you know, moods were great, all natural.
Very romantic.
And, and you know, it was like one of the most beautiful feelings of my whole life. And then both our phones were dead, couldn't exchange any information. And so I gave my number to his roommate and thought, okay, we're going to meet at the crane. There was this big, beautiful bird crane.
Okay.
And at the end of the night, I showed up at the crane and he wasn't there. He says he was looking for me, which, you know, I believe him because he can't even like find something in front of him in the fridge. So how the hell is he going to find me, you know, in a festival? But we were both heartbroken. He couldn't find me. I couldn't find him. And I was so sad, Sheen, like so sad. So I gave up and I was like, all right, whatever. I'm going to hold on to this moment. Because
just had a magical moment,
right? It was
right?
The most magical moment. Mm. Like, never forget. So I go back to LA. 2 months later, I'm at this awesome place downtown. In Hollywood. And I look over at the end of the bar and he's there. And he's like, Cheyenne, oh my God, I've been looking. And I was like, no way. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And then his story is that he'll say that I just wouldn't hang out with him because I just didn't ever have an excuse for him. But in my head, I was nervous because he was a white boy.
Yep.
He wasn't Muslim. And growing up, I thought that, you know, I had to marry a Muslim boy and it was just...
The image you had in your head was right. Different. Yeah.
And you know what? That was all made up in my own head because of my cultural surroundings, not mm-hmm. really because of my parents.
No one said it to
Nobody.
You.
I mean, there had been hints like of course we wouldn't, you know, like you to keep it in the tribe, but it wasn't ever a thing. But I was more brainwashed from the culture and the people around me. And so I just didn't want to break his heart. And also, I was just out of that other relationship. I was just trying to have fun and kick it. So whatever. I gave him my number. We talk. And then I just don't hang out with him. And so I get caught one night because he asked me to go somewhere. And I said no. And he was at the same place I ended up again. And I was like, okay, you know what, God. And this happened 3 times.
Oh, my God.
3 times. Different places, different times in LA.
There's no denying it.
There's now. No. So then that's when I was like, okay, you know what? This is wild. Like, fine. I'll go on one date with you, but I'm going to choose where we're going and you're going to be cool with it. And so he thought me being, you know, bougie and all of that, that I was going to take him to some
fancy
shishi thing. Yeah. And I took him up to the mountains in Malibu and we hiked into this cave where Jim Morrison used to write his poems and do all of his art. And inside the cave, it's all like gorgeous art on the walls. And you can sit on the edge and then like look over.
No way.
The whole area.
Oh, you
Malibu.
Know how to plan a date.
Yeah. And that's when he was like, oh my God, like I'm so in love with you. Like there's no way. And we never spent a day apart after that day. We actually got married in that cave.
No way. Well. Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. So the reason I'm telling you this story is to bring it back to the pain. So I end up in Vegas with him and his whole crew, and he was designing for Bieber and Miley
Wait,
Cyrus.
Wait, before we get there.
Yeah.
How was the whole telling the family about him, and what was the reception of
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I didn't do that until a lot later. I'll tell you.
Okay.
So I'll tell you because the story leads to it. So I get to Vegas for Magic. Mm-hmm. It's like this massive trade show. It's the biggest fashion trade show. And at this point, they weren't big when I met him, right?
Right.
When I met him, he was sleeping on a foam mattress, stealing avocados from his friend. No joke. And that's when I fell in love because I knew it was so real and it had nothing to do with anything else, right? Fast forward, they turned it into a multi-million dollar company in like a month, no joke. And so it became massive, right? They were on Shark Tank. They were designing for everyone. Like, it was huge. So it was a really big moment to be in Vegas at this time. And I was just in so much pain, Sheen. I couldn't walk properly. I was just like, you know what? You guys go. I'm going to stay in. And he was like, this is like one of my biggest nights. Like, why? You know? And I was like, I really can't walk. Like, I don't want to take anything else. And, you know, just doesn't feel good. My hip feels like it's going to like fall out. And he was like, okay, I'm done with your pain body story. You're going to try a healing. And back then I respected it, but I didn't believe in it. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause in Islam also it's just looked down upon, considered black magic when you believe in other things out like in the spirit world. Right. Also, I never met anybody who was authentic enough to show me the real way.
Right.
So it was always seen in a different manner of like spiritual bypassing or, you know, hippies like doing their thing. Mm. And I was like, no, that's not my jam, but you know, you guys, I respect it.
Yeah.
So I always said no to him. Mm. Even the meditations, like back in the day, he used to make me do these really weird Jose Silva, like, couldn't connect, you know, I just wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I could see it in his eyes. And I was like, you know what? Fine. Like, what do I have to lose?
At
obviously,
this point,
he'd been trained his whole life in martial arts and spirit. So I was like, all right, cool. I hadn't touched my toes in 5, 6 years. I in within 5 minutes was doing a downward dog, FaceTiming my parents, like, look, I can touch my toes, crying my eyes out, because I had learned how to free my emotional pain body from my body, from my physical body. And I realized how much pent up anger and frustration, sadness, betrayal, unloved was all psychosomatic coming up into my pain body. And when I released that, you know, your body is a genius and corrects itself immediately. And I was literally free from, I'm not even joking you, how much medication I was on every day. My parents were like, no way. They were so happy because I was so young and it was my whole life felt like it had gotten taken away. From that day forward, I became obsessed with wanting to help people and wanting to show them that your thoughts create your reality, and everything that you see, you think, and you do has a correlation to your physical being, and it has to be all in alignment, mind, body, and spirit. If not, one's going to be off, right? Mm-hmm. And what would life be like if you could actually be in full alignment? If your mind, your body, and your spirit were completely whole, like, holy shit. You know, like, this is what people talk about, true enlightenment. This is what people talk about in the movies, in the, you know, in the shows, on all the talks that I've ever heard of any, like, guru or any whatever. I don't believe in any of that. But I was like, okay, this is amazing. So I turned my entire life around. I was big into fashion. I was on E! News. I was doing the thing, the Hollywood thing. And I set sail and I went to study Reiki and prana and sit in the jungle with medicine women and men, and really for the last decade have committed my life to showing people how to fully heal. Not partial healing, not side healing, like, your full healing. We say, you know, your healing has an end date. It has an end date. You do not have to live your whole life thinking that healing is a lifelong journey. We don't prescribe to that. And so when you have those tools, which we invented called Light Force healing, we're seeing the unspeakable and the incurable, you know, correct itself. Autoimmune diseases, cancers. We've had thousands of people go through this and completely, you know, healed and beautiful. But our thing is, like, we are not the healers. We are not the gurus. We are not that. We teach you how to heal yourself. You have the power. You are the medicine, you know?
Wow. Yeah. But how do you convince people that this is possible as opposed to Western medicine where, you know, they have all of these publications and stuff? How can you also make that so that it becomes more mainstream?
Yeah. Number one, our method has nothing to do with convincing. And it's so cool because people come to us and they're like, we've tried everything. People come to us from the best people in the world. Joe Dispenza, Deepak Chopra. Everyone's like, I've been to their, you know, 9-hour trainings and like da-da-da. And I just can't sit through this meditation. I'm like, meditation will only get you so far. Yes, you should meditate, and yes, you have to clear your mind, but you have to clear everything that's ever come in the way of your full healing, and that's your past trauma. That's the time when you were 5 years old on the playground and somebody bullied you. You felt unloved, betrayed, whatever. We brush those things away normally because we don't have the tools to properly deal with them. So if I was to ask one of my clients or anybody right now, call on your higher self, tell me the thing that was the most traumatizing to you. And they give me an answer like that, right? And I say, rank it on a scale of 0 to 10. And they, most people are like, I can feel that incident from when I was 5 years old right now in my body. So that is a direct response to why you're carrying that, is because you're still carrying that. And so you can feel that unloved from the playground in your belly. Why do you have IBS? Why do you have headaches? Why do you have anxiety? Why do you have all of this? Because you haven't cleared 100% of everything that's happened to you. And so when you learn how to do that through our technique and there's nothing left, your body completely recorrects itself.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's like a cleanse of all of the bad feelings.
And that's what we say. We don't want to see you after 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, like, therapy goes on for years. People come to us and they're like, I've been at therapy for 9 years. We're like, why? Because no one has the tools. And so it's really fascinating. And it's all science, you know? And it's just so profound, so beautiful. And to see people truly, because so then on the, sorry, I'm like rambling and going on, but on the other side of your pain, most people don't know what it's like to be on the other side of their pain.
No.
So we have a purpose program. So it's 4 weeks and 7 weeks. On the 7 week journey, after you clear everything, then you can focus on your purpose. What happens majority of the time in life is that people are trying to pursue their purpose without being healed. So the prerequisite to your full embodiment of your purpose is to heal first and then do that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're half-assed doing the work that you're doing, mm-hmm. right? Which is why you have so many coaches and so many meditation teachers and yoga and all of that who are not healed, trying to teach other people, right? Which gets you wounded results, mm-hmm. which is why a lot of people have what they still have, because they haven't found anybody, or they haven't found it within them to completely clear all of it. Does that answer your question?
Wow, no, that's amazing. There's so much to process here. And definitely I agree with you. There's science in there, because even for me growing up, I used to have a really unhealthy relationship with stress.
Yeah.
Associated with going to school and things like that.
Yeah.
It would always manifest in my body.
Yeah.
I would either get like dry scalp or mm-hmm. my gums will be like sore. Inflamed.
Yeah.
Definitely only during the time of exams, right? So your body reacts to your feelings.
Of course.
So I completely agree with that. But it's interesting, right? So how much like pushback or like, you know, do people show mistrust in the whole healing thing? How do you deal with that?
You know, I haven't had any of that.
You haven't?
No, because the people who come to us, so I have been super blessed. Mm. And from the get-go, I've only worked with really high level entrepreneurs. Majority of my clients are all celebrities, billionaires, whatever. And then from there, you know, those kind of testimonials and those kind of experiences only warrant, you know, trust. And then from there, when we actually landed in Bali on accident, and we created the 4 week program, we were used to doing everything in person. But during COVID, we were like, what are we going to do? Like, we really need to help people. And so we were healing and helping facilitate the healings of cancers online, getting people out of the hospital online. And so it just kind of became this snowball effect. I mean, I have a wait list. It's pretty amazing. Mm. And I don't get any hate, to be honest. I don't get anything like that, because there hasn't even been one person that hasn't fully transformed.
That's amazing.
Mashallah. It's wild. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's like we got a pretty high success rate here.
Mm.
Yeah. And the only time that it doesn't work is if the individual stops.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's karmic or something, you know, out there, mm-hmm. but it hasn't. And yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. But it must, like, how do you protect your kind of like mental energy from taking everyone else's pain around you and dealing with
It's definitely a skill, mm-hmm. and it also takes a certain type of practice. So not only have we, you know, studied the science behind all of it and the nutrition, all part of it, but we've sat in the jungle with the true maestros and the indigenous people who hold the wisdom keepers to all of this information. And so I think that learning from them has been the number one source of really, truly knowing how to be a healer.
Mm.
It's from the earth. It's from the plants. It's from listening to the trees. It's from sitting with the indigenous and sitting with the maestros who have the answers, and to get advice from someone who lives their life in trees is definitely the most honorable form of advice for me. And so, you learn a lot doing that. You learn a lot from sitting in the jungle. You learn a lot from those, you know, medicine workers. And I feel like when you also take it on as such a commitment and an honor, like there are certain things that we have to do. I have to clear myself before I ever go and want to clear anybody else. But it's also intention is everything, mm-hmm. right? So I know who I'm working for. I work only with the light and with God. And so I know that in my heart, like, I can't take anything on. Of course, I have empathy.
Yeah.
But I personally know that I'm not taking any of that on. And that's like a true, like, you have to train and really know how
that's
to,
a skill to have, right?
Yeah, totally.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you, obviously it's impressive, your journey is impressive. Thank you. But I know that anyone from the audience, when they listen to, you know, someone who came from not being part of that world and mm-hmm. then you became a healer. And I know that Grazia said you're the most sought after female healer. And you said you work with A-listers, celebrities and stuff. How does one make that jump? What do you think helped you along that journey? What were specific pivot points? This episode has been kindly sponsored by The Inner Space. The Inner Space fuses mainstream psychology with spiritual psychology to take a holistic approach to healing, covering the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual aspects. They focus on emphasizing the importance of taking a learning approach to life and using all the challenges and setbacks as the fuel to personal growth and evolution. It was founded by Maisar and Noor to spread love with everyone around. So please check out the links in the description box below if you're looking for a safe space for inner growth. Thank you.
Yeah, so once you see, you can't unsee, right? And once you know, it's just the truth. Like when you can physically, I think mine came from experience. Like when I physically didn't feel good, when I was physically sick, when I had done everything in my power to try to feel better and still couldn't. And the only thing that helped me was true healing from a spiritual level. I couldn't deny it, right? And then that was the beginning of it. After that, when I accepted my gifts meaning after Alexander and I had this amazing healing, I started to awaken and I could hear things, I could see things, I could see color in things, I could feel energy in things. And that freaked me out. And that made me go into more depression because I was like, this is not for me, whatever. Like, I was too scared to make the jump because I was like, what are people going to think? And is he going to think like I'm a schizo? Like I can hear things, like who, you know, was not my world, right? But energy doesn't lie. And it was such a profound physical and spiritual existence. Like we would go camping and I could see in the lake where the fish were just by energy. And that's how we ate. And so he was like, listen, and you know, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be where I am today. He made me sit down and promise that I wouldn't shun my gifts away because I'm here for a greater purpose, and that's to help other people. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I took that role on and I would take my first clients and everybody was having profound emotional and physical transformations, I couldn't stop. It is in my DNA to be here for a greater purpose, and that's to help other people and to help other people heal and find their purpose. Because what are we here for? We're not just here for eat, sleep, entertainment, repeat, right? We're here to change the world. And if you're going to be part of that new earth model, you have to make a difference. You have to be doing something. Like, what is everyone doing if not helping each other? Right?
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. And so I think it was just through my experience because that drove me, because I knew what it was like to be under. I knew what it was like to be depressed. I knew what it was like to be addicted to everything. Mm-hmm. I knew what it was like to be partying and just living for paycheck to paycheck or like, you know, whatever. And when you really know in your heart of hearts that you're here for something bigger and you've found it, there's no stopping, you know? There's no stopping, yeah.
And do you have any advice for people on how to find their purpose?
Yeah. Heal yourself first. You have to be able to clear 100% of everything that's ever happened to you in order for you to fully live in your purpose. Now, purpose is not a lifelong journey either, right? It's evolving. You evolve with it, right? So I think that once you clear all of the negative emotional baggage and trauma that comes with your life, then you can really truly see and feel who you really are. If you don't have that, then you are operating from a wounded state, right? You still have depression and anxiety, but you want to help people. You can't. That's why they say put your mask on first in the airplane, because you have to take care of yourself. And if you don't take care of yourself first, you're going to be running a really low vibrational operation, which is unfortunately most of the world, right? And you look at all these like amazing CEOs and like billionaires and millionaires, they're all suffering. Most of them are all suffering. we should be living in the biggest peaceful planet in the world right now, but we can't because everybody is so consumed with war and violence and tragedy, you know? And so my biggest advice is to really clear everything that's ever happened to you so that you can operate from a full power place.
Amazing. Yeah, that's really good advice because I had this really interesting interaction with somebody who is a confidence coach.
Yeah.
And they were really freaking out about going on stage. I was like...
See? Would you hire them?
Exactly. But also, I'm like, if you're giving people practical tips, I understand you know, when you're external, you can see someone's world better, bigger picture, you can give advice. But if you're teaching people about confidence, then surely you can teach yourself about that confidence, but it's not aligning. Therefore, what are you teaching?
Exactly.
If it's not proven.
I totally agree with you. And another thing that is so disappointing in my line of work is that I've been doing this for over a decade, right? Everybody got really into wellness and coaching and all of that post-COVID. And there's such few people out there who are truly authentic in what they're doing, right? And I always say you can drink all the green juice you want and go to all the yoga classes you want and, you know, preach all that BS that you want, but until you fully are clear yourself, you have no business teaching other people. And that's the problem, right? I can name maybe 2 to 3 people who are just full power, super authentic and real in what they do. And what's really sad is I won't obviously mention any names, but the really big companies, healing companies and sites, all of their teachers that they are, you know, providing other people with are mentally ill. They're actually crazy. And a lot of my clients come from these places saying, I spent all this money on this thing and the teacher ended up being, you know, not well. And that's so sad to me because you have all these vulnerable people who need help.
Yeah. And you're promising them help.
And you're promising them help and you're fucked up yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me, that's like the worst. And so I feel you on that. It's like, don't go trying to help other people until you've fully healed and helped yourself. Like, number one.
For sure.
You know?
For sure.
Yeah.
But what's been your journey from, obviously, you've moved countries, you've lived in different worlds, and you've also moved from, as you said, the whole Hollywood fashion into the healing world.
Yeah.
Did you see your social group change when you had all of these changes in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. So in Hollywood, I was running with the wrong circles. I definitely still have some of my bestest friends there, but you get caught in the scene, especially if you have a little bit of fame. And so like my husband, he was on Twilight and he was on a bunch of shows. And then I was on TV and I did a lot of modeling and I had a lot of celebrity friends. And the point we got to was that and in all honesty, like this is why I can say my experience has been so cool is because I actually lived the life. Like I've lived all of that and I know how it feels to be in all of those situations. And there just came a day where we just couldn't do it anymore. And we were like young, thank God. And we were like, this isn't for us anymore. Like we grew up there. I'd been there for 13 years. I basically like was done. He was born there. He was born in Malibu in Santa Monica. And so we said, there's no way we would ever want kids here. Like there's no way. There was such a different energy. Things were starting to change. I mean, if you look at it right now, America's the biggest joke of a country. Sorry, but it's true. And it's like a talk show. And we could sense that back then. Right. And it's getting worse. And so we were like, let's go. And I kept having these reoccurring dreams of this island that is going to house the Light Force Center, this like gorgeous pyramid that I'm going to build somewhere. And so we were like, let's just set off and see. So we went to Europe and we landed in Ibiza sober. And we found the most epic, you know, connection. It's the third most magnetic place on the planet, Esvedra in Ibiza. And I was like, this is it. We're moving. And so we packed everything He sold Spirit Hoods. We moved to Ibiza. I had my first baby there on the mountain. And I had an apothecary there. Like, we were vibing. Ibiza was my dream. It's still my dream. Was my dream home. We had everything going for us. We were going to close on a retreat center. Mm-hmm. And the day we're closing, the lawyer calls and says... They flew a drone over the bottom of the hotel that we were going to purchase, and there was an illegal build. And I don't know if you know about Spain, but you can barely get a permit to build a shower. So if you have an entire illegal build down there, it's not going to work. And he was like, so you can't run it as a hotel. You have to just have it as a house. And I'm like,
that's a huge house
investment. That's not going to make a return, you know, like, oh my God. So all of a sudden we ended up, and my husband's agent, he had an agency at the time, on a blow up mattress, because we'd just moved out of our other house thinking we're going to move into the retreat center. And dream pulled out from underneath us. So we were like, you know what, let's just go to Bali for a week and recoup, go for a vacation. We'll come back. We'll find another hotel. It'll be back. Everything's fine. And we get to Bali and... It's our first week in Bali, and I was doing a photo shoot at a hotel. And I remember just having a really weird feeling at night and went to sleep super late. And at 3 or 4 a.m., I hear spirit or God or somebody in my ear saying, wake up, wake up, wake up. And I never wake up. I'm like a really good sleeper. And I woke up, and I look over, and there was a man moving my child's crib toward the door, and my son almost got kidnapped first week in Bali. And I remember the terror and the fear and the shock hitting my body to where I didn't know what to do. And so
you're frozen, right?
Yeah, like totally frozen. And like thug life California girl in me is like looking over at the, there was a lamp, and I was like, do I grab the lamp? Or is that going to like be too much time? Like, will he escape? You know? And so I just start screaming for Alexander. And luckily, Alexander chased him out the door. He was dressed in a wig and a short skirt. He was a...
Dressed as a woman.
Tranny, yeah. I think. Transgender. And it was...
What, but there was just one person
at the door, at
inside our room.
There was just one person. Outside, there was a whole prostitution ring waiting for my husband and or waiting for my kid. And we know this because luckily he left his phone in our bathroom. And so we saw all the messages and what was really going on. And the freaky part was he had been waiting for us and had come in through our bathroom window, and he had like rearranged all of my makeup brushes, like rearranged my makeup. There was a pillow inside, so he'd been like wanted to maybe take a nap until we were like fully asleep. I don't know what the plan was. He stole.
Oh, so he stayed in the bathroom.
He stayed in the bathroom for must have been like 4 hours.
But you didn't go to the bathroom.
No, I saw this when I.
But what would be his plan if you wanted to go to the bathroom?
I'm not sure. I have no idea. I have no idea.
Also, I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but why did he drag the crib and not just take the baby?
Because
out?
It was right by the door. And I think that...
Easier. Do not wake the kid.
Yeah. And the most beautiful part about that is I had moved the crib closer to the bed because the air conditioning was right by the door. So if it was where it was, he would have been gone like faster.
You would not have woken up in time.
No. And so...
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it was definitely one of the worst days of my life. And the crazier part was that the hotel was in on it.
I was going to say, surely the hotel is in on it.
So there was... They cut our phone lines in our room. There was no security, has disappeared. The front lobby people were gone. Nobody came until noon the next day. So it was... Quite possibly, you can imagine the trauma.
Traumatic.
And I went into, you know, a great state of fear and depression.
Paranoia, right? Yeah.
I was so paranoid. And we were like sitting ducks in another country. And so we didn't even have $5. They stole everything, all of our money, my jewelry, my wedding jewelry.
They managed to steal
everything. And they had, so what I think he was doing was like he was passing back and forth all of our stuff. to like his
to
friends
the people and outside. Those,
yeah.
Okay.
And then the last thing was the baby. And so there was a prostitution ring. You could see the pimp. They looked like they were really like high on drugs. It was crazy. And then Alexander runs back because he didn't realize there were so many men there. Like
yeah.
He didn't. And then he was like, oh, shit,
it's
they're
just
alone.
Him. Yeah.
They're alone now again.
Yeah.
In the room, and they're going to know that. And they were like, where's the baby? Where's the baby? Where's our phone? Like he lost, that guy lost his phone. So we locked ourselves in the room. And didn't even have money for coffee the next day. The hotel was... or we won't even go there. And so I am freaking out. I'm getting me out of this country, but I don't have my ID. I don't have, we don't have anything, right? So I'm calling the American embassy. Like it was just such a mess. So we finally get his mom to buy us a hotel somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And we move and to a different, cause this was like in the middle
mm-hmm.
of like the party town in Chengdu.
Right.
And so we move and there's all this news, like there's this new virus out.
It's COVID.
Guess what? We get locked down
in Bali.
In Indonesia, in Bali, because no American citizens are allowed back into Europe. And so our entire home, all of our businesses, my dog, everything. And then this just had happened to us. So I was like, oh my God, like this is wild. So we're in Bali with nothing. And we had to rebuild, and we obviously, you know, we were blessed. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we figured it out in a few weeks, but I had a choice, and that was to, you know, swander and, you know, get lost in the depression and anxiety and go that route again, or I can turn my pain into purpose. And so I became obsessed with the stats and really finding out what was happening to our children on the planet. And if it wasn't for what almost happened to my son, I would be as lost as most parents are today. So I turned that pain into purpose and I started my own foundation. It's called the Light Force Foundation. And we help prevent trafficking and sexual abuse for children around the world. And we partner with all different kinds of organizations. My main organization that I partner with is called Child Rescue Coalition, mm-hmm. and they're out of the States, and they have developed a software which is so incredible that tracks predators and pedophiles who download child sexual abuse material,
mm-hmm.
and they prosecute and find them. And mm-hmm. so unfortunately we're living in a world where people desire their sexual material to be of children, and it's disgusting, it's terrible, and it almost happened to my kid. And we need to be so aware and so present, and people get so weird and they don't want to talk about it and they don't want to look at it, but 90% of the people who touch our children or try to our inner circle of friends.
Yeah, most of the times it's someone who's related, yep. or someone that.
And 90% of my clients out of the thousands that I've had have been sexually abused, raped, or molested before the age of 4. And now 1 in every 5 people, like grown adults. So this isn't something we can just turn a blind eye to anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I am here to help educate or whatever I need to do, right? To make this known. And unfortunately it starts way at the top, which is what I'm sure you're seeing around in the world right now. But it's really beautiful because it's shining a light, you know, Sound of Freedom, my friend's husband's movie, all of these great initiatives that are coming out are actually forcing people to watch, you know. And I think that together we can actually make a difference to help abolish,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything that has to do with this sick industry. But it got worse in COVID, you know, and so that was my Bali. That was my Bali. That was a small part of my Bali
I know.
Story.
Yeah.
So everything happens for a reason. 1,000,000% I believe in that. But what you're going to do to turn that story around mm-hmm. is completely up to you. And I feel like everybody can find their purpose through pain as well.
Yeah.
You know.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I will put all of the links in the description
Thank
as well
you.
For people to have a look oh. at this. One last thing I wanted to speak to you about,
yes.
which is Sorry. I've seen that photo shoot you did breastfeeding your son
yes.
in that beautiful lehenga.
Where my nipples today for you.
So tell me, what was the motivation behind? What was that?
So that was in Ibiza. I was shooting for my friend's collection in India. She's really big now. Her name is Shibika, and her lehengas are and her company is called Papa Don't Preach.
I love that brand. It. Yeah.
So dope. And I was actually taking a break. And after I became a mother on the island, I became so much more present in the earth, in the world, in, you know, just being able to birth on that island and to be able to be around women who actually have a say in their births and in their birthrights and breastfeed in public and eat their placentas and are doing what women were supposed to do. We're women, we're meant to give birth, but that's been taken from us by the business of babies. And people are making billions of dollars by brainwashing women that they need to have C-sections and that they need to get Pitocin in order for their water to break. Please don't come after me. This is only for, you know, most women. Mm-hmm. But it's absurd, and it made me really realize how brainwashed and programmed I was, because before I moved to Ibiza, I had no idea about natural birthing or anything like that. So it was because of Ibiza that I learned that, you know, the placenta is the forgotten chakra, and that you're not supposed to cut the umbilical cord, and that you can give birth on your own and you don't need a whole team. If you want one, that's fine, but you don't have to. And if you have enough power within you, you can have it. Both my kids were born at home. Issa, who's now almost two, was a free birth, meaning no assistant, medical, midwife, anything at all, just me and Alexander. And yes, that takes courage and power, but the motivation behind that is that the women that we were before and our ancestors, who they were, we were meant, and Africans, we were meant to give birth. There's no, you know, you're not supposed to have your legs up on a table. You're supposed to move around and dance and squat and sit in water and be in nature, you know, and all these other things that have nothing to do with birthing have become popular. And, you know, most of my friends, which is, this is fine, and I still love everybody who chooses to birth however they want, it's their body. But most of my friends sign up for C-sections. Most of my friends, you know, are having injections in their back. When you're going through your whole pregnancy, eating the right foods and doing all the right things and not even, you know, touching certain things, but the second your water breaks, you're injecting yourself with all of this medication, it doesn't make any sense. Mm. And so I wanted to become an advocate for breastfeeding, because especially in our culture, it's looked down upon to breastfeed in public. It's looked down upon to have your nipples out. It's look whatever. And I understand that part. I understand the beauty in being conservative. Like, I get all of that. But I was shooting and I was on break, and Aya, my boy, I breastfed him until he was three. He'd never been sick once. And I looked at Alexander and he was like, okay, let me just shoot this. Cause it was a break from the shoot. It wasn't planned. And I looked at him and I said, mark my words, this is going to go viral.
Because and it did.
It went crazy viral, and no one's ever done it. And that was the cool part, because to be an empowered South Asian influence in a time where people are, you know, have forgotten, that's the thing. People are forgetting what it is to be a mom and what milk, real milk, does. And I understand, you know, some people aren't blessed like that. But if you are, you don't have to be discouraged. And that was my message, and it went crazy viral. It was like printed on millions of front page of the Times.
I saw it at the time.
And then I became known as the breastfeeding girl, right? So I ran with it, and I did it like all the time.
But it was mostly positive, right?
Which
was
amazing. All positive. The fact that people were some psychos,
but that's always the case.
Yeah. You know about those psychos. Yeah. So I had some people, but you can't argue. What's the argument here?
You know?
I was kicked out of restaurants in London and stuff like that. So that was interesting. But other than that, you know, I actually helped so many people convert from going to the hospital, or if you want that, that's fine, but you have to know your birthrights, because they'll try to do everything in their power to put something else in your system that's, you know. And so I took it and ran with it and became an advocate for birthing, for natural birthing, for knowing who you are as a woman. Women don't even know the power of the placenta or how it is so beneficial for kids and baby before and after. So yeah, that was my big
love it. Your big splash.
My big splash.
I have a final question for you.
Tell me.
Which I ask all of my guests, which is, what does success mean to you now?
Oof. To truly be successful, I believe, doesn't have anything to do with monetary, anything monetary, because I have learned what it's like to have so much money, to lose so much money, to try to work so hard to get that money for it to just fall apart and I'd have to start all over. I say that success to me is truly knowing who you are on the inside and nourishing every part of your soul until you know that you're okay and that your soul's calling is here for something really big and purposeful that doesn't have anything to do with how much you're making. That's your true vision and that's your true purpose and that's your true reason of being here on earth. So a successful mindset and a successful heart to me means more than actually achieving the dollar signs, and that's also great, but also using that for change in the world is the ultimate form of success for me, I think.
Love that. What a great note to end on. The time flew past. I had so many more things to ask.
I know.
But thank you so much.
Oh, you know what? I want to give your listener something.
Go for it.
If you're watching this, for everybody that says they came from Sheen's podcast, I'd like for you to mention it. So if you go to, you'll put the link, but if you go to my site, lightforcecenter.com/redpill, and you mention this, I'm going to send you a free healing journey with guided meditations, emails, so that you can start somewhere, and it's totally free of charge, just so you can see what it's like and to carry the spirit of this
talk. Amazing. Thank you so much. Of course. Love that. Everything will be in the description box, but thank you. And we'll have to have part two at some point.
Yeah, we have to.
Yeah. Thank you.
I could sit with you all day. I love you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.